Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to announce a new series, the Satori Dialogues, which sprang from mages, sages, and seers. And now without further ado, Serpentis Satori. Greetings, Satori. How are you today?
All right.
So congratulations on getting your own show.
Well, thank you.
And what do you plan on doing with this new show? Which bold new direction will you take it in?
Well, first, I think you and I are going to talk about things that you and I talk about in private that more people need to think about because it's outside of their little boxes.
Okay, sounds good.
And then I have been encouraged to discuss more of Southern fried magic and discuss the difference between a doctor and a witch. Because I guess I am the only spokesman for Southern magic.
Okay, that sounds great. So far we're off to a great start then. Where will you be starting this journey tonight or this afternoon?
Well, actually? you've been accused of ghetto theomancy. So let me explain how that normally works for everybody else.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter what god, deity, power, angel, saint. It doesn't really matter what power we're talking about. The process is the same whether you're talking about Jesus and Buddha or whether you're talking about Hercules or Shango. You go through the same stages because you and the god are working on trust with each other, and on some level you're building up levels with each other. So you normally start with a $20 deity and a $20 holy symbol, so you and the god can talk, and so you can put the holy symbol on and let them affect your day however they are going to. And that is pretty consistent whether we are talking about a Catholic confirmation or a Buddhist empowerment or getting your beads when you go through your first Santeria initiation, or what all of us other pagans do as homebrew. The system is essentially the same.
Correct. I would quibble
and
on
what,
abuse, but that's okay. But yes, essentially the system is the same. You're right.
Right, and it doesn't matter whether we're talking about Catholic confirmation or the Three Warriors initiation or what a lot of us pagans who came up in the 80s were doing in our own way and would later find out that that's the same as what the established religions do anyway.
Now, this is something that a lot of metaphysical, spiritual, religious, you know, however you, magical, however you deem to class them, groups are currently focusing on. Respecting the tradition that they have adopted or were born into or indoctrinated into or initiated into with the universal. And while honoring what the path that they took, also acknowledging that there's a universal aspect to what they're doing, and that unites them with everybody else who's doing it in some way.
No, we covered that mostly in the Heart Judgment episode. We covered that religions are essentially dietary and ethical, and how you choose to be judged when you're not here anymore. That other than that, there really isn't a difference. The differences are how you want to be judged. And like, I can't really explain to my Indian coworkers Hecate or Athena, because for all the gods they have in India, they don't have those two. They just don't have them. There's no equivalent. They do not translate.
And some do translate, like, for instance, Hercules being Balarama, or Belus, as the Romans called him. And there are several
And Hermes other being Ganesh, right, and Hermes being Ganesh, and Hera mm-hmm. being Lakshmi. A lot of that is fine, but then you do run into the gods who don't translate between countries.
Right.
Like, Oya is not Isis. Isis and Hecate are very defined personalities that don't really translate. And saying they're the same has caused a lot of problems throughout history. Because they're not the same, they're just both goddesses of magic. Not enough.
And then we get into the whole argument with soft and hard paganism and their views of the gods and the universality or non-universality of the gods. And I found that that argument is true on both sides of it, that in some cases one side, their view is correct, and in other cases, like the one you just brought up, they're not.
Well, but that's the problem with being so binary about it. That it's one thing to say Thor, Shango, Indra are all the same because they are, but then you get into characters in the pantheons that don't translate. Loki and Elegua are both tricksters, but that's it. That's all they have in common. Their mythology is not at all the same. Hecate and Isis are both goddesses of magic. Other than that, which may be stapled onto both of them, they're not at all the same. And that's where we need to think about gods as personalities. And we learn about that when we think about the difference in offerings, what we feed those gods. There's a big difference between what you feed Thor and what you feed Shango, but some of that is tribal and cultural. As the same as they are, there's still a cultural issue here. And I think rather than think about hard and soft polytheism, we need to think about cultural values from which the pantheon arose. Because half the Greek gods aren't even Greek.
And that's reflected in the Greek lore as well. Like Dionysus came from India, that Apollo and Artemis came from Hyperborea, the north. So that's acknowledged in myths. Some of the heroes too, like Cadmus, came from Phoenicia.
Right. And that's the problem with trying to oversimplify into hard and soft polytheism, because they're both true at the same time. We just have to be careful, because when I have to explain Hecate to my Indian boss, because he knows when Hecate's in the room because he has enough faith to see gods, and I know when Krishna's in the room. And I'm just like, Hare Krishna, I just go through it. And he's like, well, you're goddess. Like, well, a Roman woman would tell you Hecate is the goddess of keys and guard dogs. People today don't know what they're talking about. Because at that point, he and I had a Saturday where every single dog that came into the store, like, high-fives me. And he doesn't understand what's going on. I'm like, well, you know, my goddess is the goddess of guard dogs. So all the dogs are like, word to your mother. How's your mother? How's she doing? Well, because that would be obvious if you were a dog, right?
Right.
From their point of view, it's very obvious who I am the minister of.
Or if you're kin to Hecate, then that would be obvious as well.
Right. But because they don't have that in their country, and the really bad book from before World War I tried to say Hecate was Kali and Lakshmi at the same time. Huh? How do you do that? slowly explain that to me. But I guess we're moving on to a somewhat different topic, and that is the namaste topic. That if we are all God, and gods are aspirational, the one you choose to buy your idol of is sort of a choice on both sides and sort of aspirational.
Right. I've often seen the heroic path or the theurgic path as an aspirational path. It's your process of becoming.
Right, because initiation never ends. And the whole point of the gods who choose us and whom we choose is because we want to work on being more strategic, so we buy a nice Athena. Being better at communication, so we buy a nice Hermes. Making more money, because that's what people think Hecate does.
Well, several of them do.
Those of you who aren't family tend to think that's all mom does, but that's fine. That's fine. She's okay with that. She's okay. And I think that is a better way of thinking about it than hard and soft polytheism, that on some level you are enrolling in a certain type of school. If you want to work on being more athletic and stronger and more fit, you talk to Shango or Hercules or Thor, because they are the gods of lightning and justice and physical strength. Whichever one you like, whichever one you think is more fun, however that works for you.
I've taken many paths and have played hide and seek with my operant archetype, tutelary deity, ancestral god, whatever way you want to, higher self, highest self. And I found that the path remains cultural up until the point where you see the god's face. And again, that's not a literal thing, it's although it can be. It's just for lack of a better term. And then when you glimpse the energy or the intelligence or the entity beyond the cultural manifestation, which is real in a distinct personality as well within the confines of the cultural mythology. But behind that mass, so to speak, as Campbell called it, there's the same creative force. And
the same power.
The same power. And I've seen the aspirational path as a little bit more than the type of transactional relationship that you're describing. In my estimation,
but they're interconnected. As you are trying to become more like Thor, you give Thor more things so Thor can explain more things, so you can see Thor more clearly and he can see you more clearly, because then Thor sends you on more quests. And those quests allow you to become more Thor-like.
Right, and then there comes the point where you are Thor, and you've always been Thor.
Right.
You become Thor here.
It just appears transactional because it's an investment on both sides, because a lot of people don't go that far. A lot of people stop at the $20 holy symbol and the $20 deity, and just light a tea light to it and say whatever they're going to say once a month, and that's their religion. Lots of people just light an incense stick to one of their household gods, and that's what they do. They don't make big meals for Hecate or Shango. They don't actually listen to what they're trying to tell them when they're wearing the holy symbol. And they don't take the quests. Because if you don't take the quests, you never get any further.
Right.
And
it becomes still self and other. And
I
describe it as people wanting to be children of or pets of, you know, the deities, rather than interact with the deities themselves.
So when you're a child, you are interacting with the deity. You're just putting them in a parental relationship over you and
Correct.
You're doing that. You're doing that because you're doing Mama Knows Best, or our Father Knows Best. Since I'm used to that being Hecate, I'm used to Mama Knows Best. And since she's as powerful as she is, arguing very rarely leads to solutions with her. But
now,
I think that is one of the major misunderstandings is stepping away from the fact that polytheism is supposed to be aspirational.
Can you repeat that? I'm missing something. I'm missing a connection.
In Hinduism and Santeria, your main dude is aspirational. You aspire to be more like Alegua. You aspire to be more like Shango. You aspire to be more like Ganesh. I think Westerners either aren't listening to that or have gotten too transactional.
What I seem to notice, and again, this is just my observations, is that in the forms of religion that I'm encountering here, it's almost this is the age of Hermes. This is the age of information. This is the age of entrepreneurship.
Right.
It's kind of like going to a store. Like as you described earlier, if I need advice about this, I go to this person and I make an offering. If I need advice about that, which is a separate department in my life, then I go to the appropriate department and make an offering. There. That's how my observation as to what many people are doing.
Well, right, like deans of different colleges at a university.
Right, so it wouldn't be their aspirational deity, which is this is my ideal self, this is what I strive for, this is what I'd like to embody or express.
But that's the advantage of polytheism. The advantage of polytheism is if I need a road opened, I talk to Alegua or Hermes or Ganesh.
Right.
Because I need a job.
So that's not aspirational. That's, basically...
Functional.
Functional.
That's functional.
Yeah.
And there are differences, but a lot of those differences, again, are tribal and cultural.
And lighting a candle or a tea light once a month would be like giving the family a call once a month to see how everybody's, doing. Hey, how you doing? Everything okay with
right.
you? This is what happened here with me. And a lot of our relationships with human beings are pretty much like that. So that's what their relationship is with the deity. But as we've discussed very many times, our interactions with the deities are relationships, And I've described before some of the ritual books is kind of like dating manuals, the same purpose in humans. This is what this deity likes. This is how they like to be approached and so on and so forth. And again, there's nothing wrong with that, I feel, because that's how some human relationships are. And your relationship is what your relationship is, but you're not, the relationship isn't only what you find in like a dating guide.
Well, but that's basic stuff because we no longer have standing clergy for most of our polytheistic gods right now. You can't really go to a Hecate temple and light a candle there because we don't have that. You can't really call a Morrigan priestess because even if there is one in your neighborhood, you don't know who she is. So you have to buy the book. And the book has to tell you what you should do to approach Hecate or the Morrigan.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
It's not that information isn't there. It's that you don't know where to look because those people are still hidden because we still live in a culture that thinks it's Christian. And we're still the other. But on some level, that again is cultural. Like you would offer the Morrigan whiskey and a Alegua rum. Because that's what people have always done. Hello?
I'm listening. I'm absorbing what you said. Now, in terms of communicating with the deity, there are a lot of different systems. It's called divination, and there are a lot of different tools that you can use to divine the will of the god you are addressing.
It's easier just to do communion. Mm-hmm. Make them the meal, pour them their rum or their whiskey, light the candle, put on whatever the music for the date is, and just let the date go along. Just listen to what they're trying to tell you, and eventually you'll hear. Because the more stuff you put between you hearing them and them hearing you is stuff. And eventually that becomes an obstacle.
I find that with me, synchronicities work best. And then after synchronicities, dreams and what comes through meditation. So,
dreams and meditation while you have the candle lit are the best idea, rather than trying to create hoops for the gods to jump through.
And I find that synchronicity functions are best because there you'll get answers and will be repeated if you're paying attention.
Right.
Or if you're not paying attention, as the case may be.
To make sure you're paying attention.
To make sure you're paying attention, yes. Or to make sure you're really paying attention.
Or to make sure you know what you're supposed to do. Because sometimes with the Greek gods and the Celtic gods, they are less concerned about what you did today and more concerned about where you are in the quest school. Have you talked to so-and-so yet? Why would I need to? Okay, no, not yet. I'll find them. I'll find them.
Yeah, I've spent much of my life.
But that's also learning to pay attention to synchronicity, which is another thing that modern people aren't very good at. And trusting our dreams is another thing modern people aren't very good at because they try to dismiss it.
Sometimes dreams are difficult to decipher right away, you know, and you have to wait to figure out or to.
That's why you need to write it down and wait for it to explain itself.
Mm-hmm.
Hecate sends me dreams all the time that I'm like, I don't quite know what this means right now, but this is what I'm doing in the dream.
Right.
In my dream, this is what I'm doing. I don't understand why I'm doing that, but she's standing there and I'm doing it, so it's important. I don't understand how it connects to anything else, but that's what I have to do.
Yeah, I had a dream last night that I was engaged in activity I've been engaged in since childhood involving teaching. So that part of it I understood, and the setting I understood. But then there were elements of it that came out of left field. I have no idea what they mean because they don't connect to anything that I can ever remember doing or focusing on. So that's my message, I guess, to just keep that in mind as I wend my way through life, because it'll mean something later on.
Right.
A lot of times things make perfect sense only in retrospect. You know, I looking back on my life, a lot of things that I've been shown or told sounded pretty scary or like what when I first heard them. But I found that trying to figure out what they meant was a waste of time. They make perfect sense afterwards, and that's when the message is
important.
They
make perfect sense when they're in the present. It makes perfect sense when it's what you're doing in today's episode.
Or after you've done it, then it makes perfect sense.
Well, it's still today's episode. That's just using it as the post-credit scene. Like, oh, there was that. Oh, there was – that's what that meant.
Yeah, when I was younger, I used to concern myself and worry about such things. Then I learned just let it go, go with the flow. It'll make sense when it makes sense. And then it's like, oh, yeah, okay, now that makes sense.
I used to do that, and then a different child of Zeus at one point realizes that's what I'm doing. And she says, eventually the future becomes the present. And after she told me that, I'm like, okay, that's a child of Zeus telling the child of Hecate. You're you're thinking too much about things that are somewhere ahead. But when they become the present, you're like, oh, so now we're here. So now we get off. So now we leave the airport. So this is Bangkok. Oh.
One of the things that I like working with the Olympians is that the Olympians, like a lot of people are perceiving that their gods are coming back.
Right.
I've always had the perception, I guess because of my upbringing, that the gods never left because they're in everybody's house and statues, you know, who's Greek. And on the front lawns, if they have front lawns, or in the backyards, if they have backyards.
Right.
And you're taught their exploits in school, and not only Greek school, but also in American school at some point, you're taught about them. And they're on top of
it. And there was opera, and there's opera.
Yes. And movies and TV and cartoons and
well,
books.
before there were movies, there was opera. So when people try to see, like how many operas about Orpheus are there?
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of Orpheus operas.
So because they're always there and they've always been there and they're on top of government buildings and, you know, on institutions and they're in our symbolism. Hermes has his Caduceus on a flower delivery company. You know, so they, again, they're everywhere. They're omnipresent. It's a different thing because it's not a dawn. Where you wonder what brought them back and what that could mean.
It's that we're paying attention again.
But they're here, and what are they doing here? Because you're still here. They never went anywhere. So what are they doing? And then you become aware of how intimately connected with our lives they are and they've always been.
Because they still love humanity.
Yes.
And they still love our world. We just, not a lot of people were listening to them until recently. Because those groups have always existed. The Greek gods and the Celtic gods never really went away. They just weren't, they just were treated like stories for a long time and not as people.
And that's okay because we live these stories, these myths, you know, these timeless tales are the stuff of our lives, as Joseph Campbell so powerfully pointed out.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem with trying to give unto Hermes what ancient Athenians gave unto Hermes, is that modern Hermes lives in a world with Paramount Plus and all of the food of all of the world all at the same time. And being the god of messengers, if Hermes wants Thai food, Hermes wants Thai food.
Yeah, all of my communications, which is a very big part of what I do, I communicate. Are dedicated to Hermes because that's Hermes's sphere, and I am part of Hermes's sphere in many of my activities. And what I do for Hermes because it's his sphere.
And part of me doing these dialogues and being so public is also for Hermes.
Yes.
Because there are plenty of people that know as much as I know, but I'm the one who's willing to go on the record.
And that's the key to, I think, what we're talking about today is that basically what we're doing now is Hermes. We're doing the work of Hermes in this world during the age of Hermes. So it is Hermes.
Yeah, I call it the age of Thoth, but there's no real difference there.
Right. And that was established pretty early on in the Mediterranean history. That Hermes was told was Mercury.
Yeah, and that's a situation where Greece and Rome aren't radically different.
And that's a study, the Mediterranean, in terms of the correspondences between the gods and which gods are the same and which gods aren't, even though they're lumped under the... there's that myth that when Typhon came and stormed Olympus, the gods fled. and most of them fled to Egypt, where they wore animal masks. And then, you know, that's how the correspondences survive in the Greek lore. And in astrology, of course, they survive via the route of the planets. You compare this experience we're having now as a school, and I found it useful to describe it as a school as well. You know, in that
that was how we normally describe it in New Orleans, and in New Orleans, you literally have aspect to 20 colleges with 50 departments. In New Orleans, if you want to talk to the Chongo guy, you talk to the Chongo guy. If you want to talk to the Horus guy, you talk to the Horus guy. You want to talk to Hecate, you talk to the Hecate guy. In New Orleans and before the millennium, you literally could just get referred. You don't want to talk to me, you want to talk to the Chongo guy. You don't want to talk to that guy, you want to talk to this guy. Because at that point, we had whatever that we were cosmopolitan. We had come to cosmopolitanism because we had come to understand what we are talking about today, that although Thor, Chongo, and Horus are similar and someone new might not know which one they want to talk to, at a certain point, they just have to meet all three guys and do a thing. Go do a Santeria thing with Chongo. Go do an Egyptian thing with Horus. Go do a Asgardi thing with Thor. Find out which one you like. We don't care. No one cares.
Yeah,
we care more you're doing it than we care which one.
Which one resonates and how you respond to that resonance is what it's all about. Because it depends on where you are in your path and how much of you and the deity are one at that particular point in time.
And you might not like any of those three. You might decide to go back to being Catholic and choose Michael instead.
Yes,
that happens too.
That happens too.
And part of my New Orleans perspective is we accomplished that and we understand how it works because it's just a referral system. It's just that, and you do end up with some people that don't want to choose between Hecate and Isis, don't want to choose between Thor and Chongo. That happens. That's fine. The gods know what they're doing in those situations with those people, and that's fine.
And again, this moves in mysterious ways. I've shared this story a million times, but I'll share it again here because it's appropriate. I knew nothing of Chongo until I was used to answer prayer to Chongo. I was at the time exploring the Hyperborean mysteries, and I was very much into Thor for very many years. So I was wearing a hammer of Thor, but the one I had wasn't 3D. It was kind of like flat pressed in 2D, so it looked a little bit like an axe. And I had red and white beads because those are, you know, the colors of the thunder in very many cultural milieus. And, you know, at that time, the mysteries that I was immersed in had to do with those colors. So I was wearing a necklace with the red and white beads alternating and a hammer of Thor. And there was somebody who was a devotee of Chongo, who was having a very difficult time after an accident with rehabilitation. So she prayed to Chongo to help her. And I was given by the rehabilitation office that I was associated with at the time a quote-unquote difficult case, because I always wound up getting the quote-unquote difficult cases. So anyway, they explained that she wasn't very cooperative with you know, her treatment and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So anyway, I went to her home and rang the bell, and then I got on the elevator, went upstairs, knocked on the door. She opened the door, and the first thing she saw was my necklace.
Right.
So she thanked Chongo. So I heard Chongo about Chongo, but I didn't really know very much about Chongo. So I told her that, and she started to, you know, tell me a little bit about Santeria, and then I started recognizing what she was telling me in the weird Catholicism that my cousins kept exposing us to. But we had Greek Orthodox Christianity that didn't really correspond with anyone else's Christianity either. So it was just accepted in the family that everybody has their own weird Christianity when we were kids. But that's how I found out about Shango. And in the time I worked with her and helped her with her health problem, and I did help her solve it to her satisfaction and to the satisfaction of insurance companies and doctors and so forth, I learned a lot about Santeria and Shango. So that started off another quest to learn more about that aspect of the Thunder.
Which eventually leads us to each other.
It does, because the comments made during the days of Yahoo Greek Reconstructionism. But I didn't seek that knowledge. I didn't seek that that schoolroom. I didn't seek that tradition. It kind of used me and then opened the door, and I went through the door. So these things will come up in
life. I feel the same way, but now I live in little Puerto Rico in Chicago. I've gotten used to that, and everybody's fine with it.
So these things come up through life, you know, in life situations, will take you there. And even though that was highly metaphysical and occult, it was just on a human sphere, it was just like an interaction that was even business related. So that's how the information unfolded in our daily life. But actually, it was, an invitation into a tradition through which I learned lots during my time studying it and interacting with it.
And see, my version of that story is I'm a child of Akate who moves to New Orleans and works at a voodoo shop. And at a certain level within the voodoo shop, they give you an Alegua head.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is an Alegua head and Hecate are both supposed to be in front of the door. So I do exactly what my friend will do a year in the future when she faces the same dilemma. We put Alegua on the side of the door that when you open the door, you don't see Alegua. Hecate gets to be on the other side of the door, so when you walk in, you see Hecate. And in both of our situations, we have a roommate trying to be helpful who think Alegua fell off the altar, put him on the same altar with Hecate. And once he's there, you can't really move him. And then comes the situation of Alegua and Hecate sharing an altar. And at first, for about a year, that seems weird and awkward. And then you start to understand. And then you're like, oh no, Alegua and Hecate, although they both are the gods of keys and crossroads, are not at all the same and are not offering the same services.
Mm-hmm.
Hecate is a much more Hogwarts-y magical school. Alegua is much more the wire and the street. And then there would be a book called Rotting Goddess that actually devotes an entire chapter to that. Much later, after I faced this, there's a book that explains why I faced this.
Yeah, I've had that happen where I underwent something. I thought I'd gotten something out of it. I was pretty clear on it. And then through a book or through some other medium, I found out, no, there were resonances and dimensions just to that beyond what I initially perceived, and it was a much bigger thing than I actually thought.
Well, but all of us who actually decided to be multicultural about our front doors are all better off for it. All of the people who have Hecate and Alegua, once you get used to whichever one you're not used to, you understand why that's better.
I'm at an interesting place now in that the Hercules's or the Zeus's that I'm resonating with are the ones that flip the whole story that I've been living around. And it becomes something totally different. And all the information that's been coming to me and a lot of the dreams and experiences I've been having and so forth give me a totally radical and different perspective on what I've been doing all of this lifetime. So initially I had resistance to that, but now I'm welcoming it because, again, having that element transforms everything in a exciting new way.
Because you're always on a quest, and it's always an adventure, and your inner child is always like, "What's that? What's that?"
Yes, that's true.
And no matter how weird it is, you've always got "What's that? What's that?"
And oddly, the first thing I did publicly, aside from when I was in my teens, I was a medium for a theosophical spiritualist group. At the time, they started to meld together,
right,
like into the I Am movement. And the first public talk I gave, aside from people's parlors and things, which is where a lot of instruction happened back in those days, was at the United Lodge of Theosophists. And I talked about Hercules and the Zodiac, which my talk was based on Alice Bailey's material, but Blavatsky also had some things in Isis Unveiled, and I believe the Secret Doctrine about it. So those got woven in. And also I had some experiences that didn't really make sense within any of the Hercules stories or Zeus stories that I knew. And throughout my lifetime, I've collected books that I knew I wasn't going to read that had to do with astrology and Hercules. And because I never really, I got into the planets, but I've never really been into astrology. And I collected a vast library. And now all of a sudden, the first thing I did in those early experiences I had and all the books I've collected are everything I need to do what I'm currently doing. So I don't have to look for
right.
the books all on my shelf. Yeah, and now I'm reading them, and now they're making sense. Now I know I've been carrying them around for the past 50 years or so, and making sure nothing happened to them everywhere I went.
Because now you need to understand what – now you need to take that class.
Right. So I've been collecting material. But part of us knows – I found this to be true not only in this instant – but in several other instances that even though I consciously didn't know, some part of me knew and made sure that I did these things that seemed random or nonsensical. I'm also finding, I found that by working with the ancestors, which is something that we spoke about, that even though I felt that I had, because of my teenage rebellion and my differences, I thought I had moved way past my ancestral conditioning. And when I did the ancestor work, I found out that no, I hadn't. I actually didn't fall very far from the tree at all. And after dealing with the shock of that, I came to see it and to accept it and, even to realize that that was, a good thing in terms of what I'm, currently doing. And but then again, I also realized that everything that happened was for a reason as well, because all the things I did to escape my programming actually gave me the tools I need to make use of the gift given to me by my programming and the perspective to see my programming in a brand new way. So everything's fine. Everything that happened was supposed to happen, not in terms of predestination, but in terms of my unfoldment and fulfillment, everything was okay. Even the bad decisions were good for all
reasons. I mean, that's my loop with Southern Magic, because my girlfriend at the time in high school practiced Southern Magic. Everyone would just address me as the good young doctor.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not able to drink yet, so I can't be a doctor. I'm not 21. I can't be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Then my first job after college is Reverend Zombie's House of Voodoo. So then I learn how to run a pharmacy. And when I move into Little Puerto Rico in Chicago, I start getting good young doctor again in Puerto Rican usually. And then I decide since they're going to call me that anyway, I just am going to go back to Road Opener in Florida Water and just play along. And then we did our thing last time about Road Opener in Florida Water. And rather than getting backlash or anger, everyone says at least it's you. The Southern tradition is just giving me at least it's you.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you can say red wash, black wash, blue wash, probably go back to ISIS and Egyptian cosmetics. I can say Florida water, if I can't trace it back to Persia, which I think it is from, I at least know that there's something the Romans gave their ancestors called rue water. And Florida water is also given to the ancestors. So that's not new either. New Orleans just has everything. New Orleans just has everything and does it. Just like religion, New Orleans has everything. You just need to know who to talk to. You just need to meet one guy who has to be like, no, you need to talk to that guy. What? Sprechen no Egyptian. Go talk to the Egyptian guy. I don't understand what you're saying. Go talk to that guy. Oh, you want the Asgardi guy? Go talk to that guy. His thing's on Tuesday. Go talk to that guy. Well, no, I think that is a big misunderstanding about where I'm coming from, is that New Orleans before Katrina was the most cosmopolitan, magical place in the world, because unlike Salem with its witchcraft, New Orleans had evolved to the point where we were like, if you're voodoo, you're voodoo. If you're Asgardi, you're Asgardi. Don't start trouble with people who you think don't agree with you. You're allowed to wear your holy symbol in public, but that's so people know how to greet you. No intolerance. Bad. Be nice or leave.
Well, that's healthy.
That's completely healthy, and that was exactly where we were before it all ended. That we had gotten that far, that if someone came to me asking about Thor, I'd be like, go talk to that guy. Someone came to me asking about ISIS, I'd be like, you need to meet a couple different people and figure out what you want. I don't like to speak for ISIS because I speak for Hecate, and we're supposed to have those are separate governments. Although I understand America and England are friends, but America and England are separate. Because I think that's where we're going. I think that's where we're trying to go again. But to do that, we need to be cosmopolitan, which is the step after tolerance.
Yeah, we've spoken this before, but I think the word tolerant is not a good place to be, because then it's like you're keeping your mouth tightly shut so you don't disturb the apple cart, but you're not happy. But
you're not having a conversation I had with my boss when he saw my Zeus necklace. I'm like, you say Indra, I say Zeus, whatever. And because I've had that attitude with the Indians, they're like, well, we don't understand your goddess. Like, you can't understand my goddess. She doesn't exist in your country. Don't worry about that. For some reason, her cult never took off in your country.
And this probably happened in antiquity, too, when the Greeks and the Romans were first starting to make these correspondences.
We know Rome was that way because there are letters and stuff that explain, like, and the elephant god of India and the Irish goddess of war. We know people wore their necklaces in public because you wore it outside your legion suit.
Right.
In the legions, you knew when you died you were going to Valhalla or Chernanog or Elysium. In the legions, no one ever got in fights about that. No one cared. You say the Morrigan, I say Athena. That's fine. Sure. Because that's a more cosmopolitan perspective. That you choose to see it that way. And all of the arguments I could get into without that, I'm not going to win anyway. So why bother?
Mm-hmm.
why get into it about, like, well, if you worship Shango, you should think about Thor. He has thought about Thor. He chose Shango.
Right.
He likes Puerto Rican women or something. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about it. He prefers rum over mead. Don't worry about that. Why is that an issue?
Well, we live in a world where such things become, everything's an issue.
No, but the Trojan War wasn't framed that way. The Trojan War isn't framed as a religious war. The Trojan War is framed about stealing women. And the Trojan War could have been framed as a jihad. And it never is. We never think about that as a religious war between Turkey and Greece.
Even though you had gods taking sides and placing bets. And
right, but it is never framed as a jihad. It's the same gods having, it's the same gods being partisans.
Right.
Which is a different situation.
We only have 7 minutes or so left, so we can't go down that direction. That's an episode or four a topic.
But this is the thing with gods and why we need to keep in mind that we have many gods because they're aspirational.
Right.
And as you and I have both experienced, talking to the guy in the other college is usually useful. It's usually useful if you know about Thor to go learn about Shango.
Oh.
Because you'll learn stuff, and those stories are not the same as the stories you know.
Correct. And you're right. That's what led to our conversation over two decades ago, because I had undergone that Shango experience, and I saw right away through their lore, you could understand how Theseus had a divine father and an earthly father both at the same time. You know, it's what God owns your head. Things, and you can see them. And that part of the world did have interactions with Greece and Rome. Andromeda was Ethiopian, you know, for the sake of the gods. And so this information would have been swimming around there, and it makes perfect sense for the Greeks to have that in their mythologies. But I remember that the Reconstructionists at the time were appalled by that idea, but that's how you and I started talking.
Yeah,
so
I got in big. I freaked them out because they'd always thought of me as like the child of Hecate, who is Roman, and I'm like, no, but he's right about Caesarea. Like, what? I used to work at Reverend Zombie's House of Voodoo because I'm a child of Hecate, and you see, when you graduate from medical school. No, because all of my sisters who did the same thing used exactly the same explanation about, like, no, when you graduate from medical school, they throw you into an ER. And all of us thought that, like, no, Hecate wasn't, like, being mean to us. It is like when you graduate from medical school, like, go fix people in an ER. Go get some on-the-job experience. And then the rest of you are like, why have you integrated hoodoo? Like, because there's a court case scandal. Why make someone do a two-hour Zeus ritual when there's a court case scandal in court case oil? Why do that? Especially for someone that kind of doesn't believe. All the people that kind of don't believe are probably better off with that anyway.
One of our major sages and seers, all the major sages and seers at the same time got their own shows because we'd all reached basic levels of understanding and communication. And Maria Dondra doesn't have a name for a show yet, but she's written over 65. She's authored or co-authored over 65 books on the occult. And most of her books are what you would call cookbooks. And they're not only cookbooks, but they're multicultural cookbooks. So she'll have the Zeus ritual and the candle ritual, and it's basically there. She found that these worked fairly well in her usages, and you might resonate with a different thing, or something might seem more powerful to you. So try that. But these will all accomplish the same task. So I thought of that when you said what you said.
Well, that was the thing about when I lived in Milwaukee. Girls would come over because Hecate had a great collection of cookbooks, and some of those were culinary.
Mm-hmm.
Culinary cookbooks versus New Orleans cookbooks, because in New Orleans, that word means the same thing, because a doctor doesn't need a cookbook. A doctor just grabs a cookbook to be like, how do I do this? Because I haven't made this in a while. In the same way, like, how do I make cinnamon rolls if I haven't made cinnamon rolls in 4 years? Or banana bread. Same thing. But that's also the result of being cosmopolitan. The result of being cosmopolitan is you don't call it a spell book, you call it a cookbook. Because everybody cooks it a little bit differently based on their culture.
And she says that in her writings, too, that, you know, feel free to make changes after you've tried this the way it is, you know, because you have to pretty much personalize it and make it yours and your a particular way of doing it.
Right.
Now, we only have 2 minutes left, so we need to start wrapping up. But I'm really impressed with where you're taking the show, so I'm looking forward to future shows. And also to let you know, you're free, now that you have your own show, to invite guests and review books and anything you feel you need to do to get your message out there. And I'm always here for just.
I would like to invite the other child of Hecate for the August program, because the August program does seem to be my tax write-off for Hecate anyway.
Okay. We just had another child of Hecate join our theurgists. So I will convey that message to her.
And I think that doing that is like a 60-minute style interview, asking us about being demigods and children of Hecate, would be a useful way for you to kick off your demigod thing, because then you're talking to children of Hecate about our experience with being demigods. And Hecate is a very interesting goddess. Mother is very interesting about how she does things and how she handles her children. So that will give you a good segue into the other gods.
And synchronistically, before we close, Brandy had her scheduled for August, but we'd like to interview her sooner. So we're doing a special. So her August is free, as far as I know, and I'll convey the message right away.
Okay.
So Tori, how can people contact you in the present?
No, I still prefer they go through you, because I am not, I am doing doctoring on the street level right now, because I have chosen to focus on how I can help Hercules Invictus as an organization and how I can help individuals, because I have just gotten away from a long, complicated thing, and I'm dealing with what happens when you let go of a very big, very expensive project and move on to a new one.
We discussed it another time. Thank you, Satori. You're awesome. And I'm looking forward to this unfolding adventure. And thanks to all our listeners, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in, you're in our queue, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks, Satori. Thanks, everyone.
Be well.